So the numbers are very important, but it's a different metric of calculations. And, you know, we've learned to put a healthier profit margin on them because it is a lot of work. When you build a house and you don't make much money, you're like, okay, we didn't get this right. We got to make a shift.
Yeah.
If you're a real estate investor who's sick and tired of living deal to deal, then welcome home. Hear from everyday real estate investors just like you and discover how they've completely transformed their business by taking a profit-first approach. This is the Profit First for REI podcast, where we believe revenue is vanity, profit is sanity. It's time to start making profit a habit in your business. So here's your host, David Richter.
Hey, it's David Richter of the Profit First REI podcast. Have Frank Iglesias here today. Have a really great episode. He talks about several deep things of his real estate journey of splitting focus and how that hurt, you know, along his journey, the right coach in his life that helped turn things around, the timing and reading books and just like the books that have helped him and the books that were shiny objects. It's just really good information here if you want to become a better business owner. Frank shares a lot of wisdom, and I look forward to having you listen to this episode and diving right in. Thank you for being a listener of the Profit First REI podcast. Hey, everyone. It is David Richter of the Profit First REI podcast. Super excited to have Frank Iglesias here. I was on his podcast, too. You got to check out his podcast as well. But I'm super excited because he's read Profit First, been down that road in the real estate world, helping other people. So, Frank, thanks for being on the show.
Thank you, David. I appreciate you having me out.
Well, okay, for people that don't know you, how'd you get into real estate? What brought you to this point? So then we can go a little bit deeper.
Oh, how'd we get to real estate? Well, I was a former IT guy for 15 years.
Okay.
And toward the end of that world, I, like many people back in, this is 2008, got that email, or I don't even remember what it was, about a rich dad, poor dad seminar.
Nice.
And of course, I didn't really know. So it was just kind of, but it was, you know, it was pretty with the purple or whatever his colors, the mouse and all that. So I was like, all right, we'll go. We'll check it out. Cause I was just starting to learn a little bit about investing. So I was like, all right, we'll look. And of course, at the end of whatever it was, a couple hours, it was like, whoa. Right. So then that went to the, and you know, the drill, right? It goes to the yeah, one day thing. And then next thing you know, you're buying three classes. But what I didn't know was when I bought three classes, I kind of messed myself up the more I think about it. And it's because it was foreclosure, wholesaling, and lease options.
Okay.
And the problem with that is all those were great. And of course, this is at the beginning of the real estate crash. So foreclosure, of course, blew up. But it kind of split my focus.
Mm.
And so I tell people right off the bat, yes, I would have done it a little different. I would have gone deep on one rather than buy three classes. I would have like figured out one and go all in on that.
Yeah.
But I was a former IT guy, so what was I good at? Multitasking.
Yeah.
So it was just natural. Like, oh yeah, three more things to do. That's an everyday thing in my world, right?
So, right.
But I didn't realize what I was really doing was creating a little bit of a jack of all trades approach rather than okay, a focused approach. So I tell people, don't do it the way I did it. Don't do what I did. Pick one path and go. So what I did was the next few years. So I ended up leaving IT because quite frankly, I was bored. Great company, great job, great team. Everything was great and I was bored. So it was kind of like, all right, if everything's great and I'm bored, clearly it's time for a change. And so we went all in on real estate. But we were always, you know, it was the wholesale thing. It was buy foreclosures with the idea of renting. And then, you know, lease options, there really wasn't too much of back then, right? Because everybody was, you know, it was kind of like crazy. So, but we did some fix and flipping as well. And so we kind of always had multiple things going the whole time.
Okay.
So that's how we got into it and just sort of evolved from there into bigger projects and so forth.
And since you're telling people not to go that route, how had real estate been for you? Like, was there a lot of dark times during that time, or was it like, hey, this is good, but it's just not getting us to where we want to be? I'm just wondering, in your perspective, why you're telling people, like, I wish I would have just picked one route. Was it, you know, like it got you spread yourself too thin, or what was the, what were some of those factors?
So no doubt we were spread too thin, but we didn't even really realize it.
Yeah.
Because, you know, we were doing the fix and flip, and then we would do the buy, fix, rent. But then I learned about wholesaling REOs from Lee Kearney, which, you know, everyone knows he is.
Yeah.
And that was fantastic. And, you know, in retrospect, I wish I'd gone all in on that. Right. Yeah. But, you know, you can't change the past. But we still did it, but not like to the degree he was doing it. But we always kept that tool in our toolbox. And we did wholesale a lot.
Yeah.
And but, you know, it was just, you look back and you're like, man, if I had just done one thing instead of two or three, like if we'd not, or maybe if we didn't wholesale anything, right? Because all the properties were cheap. What if we just bought everything and kept it?
Right.
Right. You know, like we can all look back and know, wow, that's exactly what we all should have done. Right.
Right. Yeah.
But, you know, you don't know these things, especially when you're new. And back then I was learning real estate. I really wasn't learning business.
Right.
And so now I've learned since then, I'm like, in some ways I'm like, man, I wish I'd learned more about business, because real estate's just a vehicle that sits on top of business fundamentals.
So then where would you say you learned fundamentals of business then? So like if you would have gone back, what type of education around business would you have gotten?
I would have gotten a business coach, because that's basically what's happened. I got a business coach where he's strong on, all right, we got to learn sales, we got to learn marketing, we got to learn branding, we got to learn systems, procedures, right? And the crazy thing about it is I came from IT. Mm. So it's like I did IT 15 years. It wasn't like these were necessarily all new concepts, but the reality is I was burned out on IT. So I didn't have that coach to say, let's pull those things you're good at already and you understand into your real estate business.
Right.
So then, that, you know, you go to a class and you're like, all right, you got to build systems to run a wholesale business, a flip business. And it's like it's some new concept. It's not new. Every corporate business that's successful has them.
Right.
But we just didn't link the two. And so I think to myself, man, I lost a lot of time because I didn't take advantage of strengths that were already there.
Okay.
And, you know, so I tell people, if you're going to be in business, have a coach. Do not do real estate without a coach.
I think that's very interesting what you said, because you're like, I had this background. I knew systems were around, but it's almost like you needed someone to point in your situation to be like, hey, you're missing this part, and you should have had someone there like guiding you along that path. So did you ever invest in a business coach along your journey?
Yeah, we finally got into that a few years ago. We finally got someone to start helping us. And, you know, it's now opened my eyes to other people that coach business. And now you look at, and once you start getting that knowledge, it's easy to look back and go, wow, we would have done this totally differently. But, you know, you can't focus on the past. We did the best with what we knew at the time. But, you know, the reality is most real estate courses don't teach business. They teach real estate.
Yeah.
Right. So it's a different world when you start looking at it outside of, you know, when you see real estate as just a vehicle, you realize there's a whole layer beneath it that without that, it doesn't run as smoothly.
And you kind of touched on that with those different areas of the business. But what do you think are those important areas that everyone needs to learn that's not just real estate specific, but more business specific?
So right off the bat, sales and marketing. Like, you got to know sales. You got to know marketing. I mean, those are the two big ones. I mean, do you need office systems? Of course you do, right? You need those things, you know, to just handle those fundamentals. A big one that I wish we had understood a lot sooner was bookkeeping.
Yeah.
The financials, because, you know, a lot of investors are like, I don't want to deal with it. And then, you know, in my experience, most CPAs don't exactly, you know, they're like, all right, here's a tax return. Maybe you'll get a tax strategy meeting. See you in a year.
Right. Exactly.
Whereas that whole financials aspect, really understanding the numbers is a huge piece of it.
Oh, yeah.
So it's easy to stale a real estate business and still have no idea what's going on with numbers. At least you think you know.
Yeah.
And then you start realizing, wait a minute, there's a lot more to uncover here. But then you're going back to that same CPA, and they're not a bad person, right? And they might have even done a great job on your returns. But the business coaching is what helps us connect the dots on how all these pieces work together. So you're a business owner, not just a real estate investor.
Yeah. Oh, that's really good. So that reminds me a lot of the cash flow quadrant, or that other book by Robert Kiyosaki. Cash flow quadrant. Where did you get that mindset of, oh shoot, I shouldn't just be a real estate investor, should be a business owner as well too? Was it from that training? Because it sounds like that was a big turning point in your life, was taking a lot of that training up front. And I just wondered where that came from too, or if you've learned something through that or somewhere else.
So the cash flow quadrant's a great book, right?
Yeah.
The whole EIS, all that. But the thing about cash flow quadrants, I read it very early. Didn't really, right? And so like anything else, when you read it, it sounds great, but until you start living it, you don't really.
It's a different ball game.
Yeah. When you start living it, you're like, oh, this is the difference between a business owner and an investor. Because a lot of times those, and especially in real estate, a lot of times those things can look the same and they're not.
Oh, yeah.
There's two different worlds. So, no, it was several years before I came across a business coach. Yeah, I was actually doing a speaking thing.
Okay.
And I went to a speaking event because I was running real estate meetings. So I got the email. I don't know how I got the email, but I got the email and I was like, oh, well, I already talk every month at a couple of meetings. Let's go learn about it, right? It was interesting. Yeah. And one thing led to another. Next thing I know is I'm signing up for what they're doing. And really, and I had no idea that what I really was signing up for was, this is the world of business, what it's like to be an entrepreneur, what are the ups and downs? And it began a slow shift in my mind. And I say slow because by then I've done real estate for a decade.
Okay.
And so, you start building what you think is what you should be doing. Right. And then 10 years later, you're like, maybe we need to start rethinking this. And I would tell you to this day, we're still pivoting.
Yeah. 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 It's like you build those habits in, it's hard to change them, or it's hard to, there's so many areas of business, right? It's like getting them all the pieces to fit. Now, before we were talking or recording here, you jumped more into the new construction space, it sounds like. So what was that journey like, going from, doing, multiple exit strategies? Now you're kind of focusing there, and why new construction? And I'm just very curious to see your take on that.
Yeah, so we did fits and flip, of course, for several years, and that evolved into someone presented me a deal, and it was our first full gut. So, back then it was like, oh, that sounds exciting. The numbers look pretty good. It was our first edition. And so we did it. And it worked out okay. It was very interesting. But, like any new toy, right? It was exciting. It's like, all right, right? And then, of course, I met people. I would partner with people. That led to a pop-the-top deal we did. Converting a triplex to a single family, that was an interesting one. Learning to deal with historic properties. And somewhere in there, someone brought us a deal, and it was a pretty rough looking house, all boarded up. And so, of course, I'm thinking, oh, okay, it'll be another one of these full gut remodels. And it turns out that it was in really bad shape. So we had a private lender at the time that was like, all right, well, let's do it, because we got it so cheap. It was like silly, especially at the time. It was silly cheap. So we were able to buy it and actually spend a few months learning about new construction, just learning from whoever I could. And then next thing you know, we were like, all right, we're going to do our first demo. We're going to knock it down. And then we built it, and it was beautiful. And we learned a lot of lessons along the way. But little did I know that not only would that side of the business increase, But, you know, new construction is a very different animal from fix and flip. It really is. And I tell people, I know you're seeing hammers and sheetrock and drywall and you're thinking it's the same. I'm here to tell you it is not. It's two very different worlds.
Talk about that. What makes the biggest differences between fix and flip and new construction?
The biggest thing is you're going to deal with, in new construction, you have a lot of preparatory work. Before you ever do a thing, there's a lot of preparation. It doesn't exist in remodeling. Because you're dealing with existing structure, things are going to get grandfathered in. Yeah. Could you still need an architect? Of course you could. If you have a bigger project, you could. And you can make a rehab complicated, but you don't have to.
Right.
Whereas in new construction, you've got to invent everything, right? Like yeah. You're starting from square one. And then if you're tearing down a house, I tell people a teardown is nothing more than a land deal with an extra step. That's all it is.
Right. Yeah.
Right. Okay. At the end of the day, it's a land deal that you need to get cheaper because you got to get rid of an existing structure, which is its own process. But you've got to do, there's a lot more prep. There's a lot more time. Everything's got to be up to current codes. Depending on municipality, you might have meetings, you might have variances, you might have X number of things to consider that in that remodel project, you don't have to deal with. And if you're doing a spec home, which is typically what investors do, okay, most investors are not doing production neighborhoods of 100 cookie cutter homes.
Yeah.
It's usually that one house, two house, maybe a small block of houses. And, you know, those are treated on a one-off basis. And they're effectively mini custom homes. Hmm. And you would think if you're just going to, oh, let's just go get plans and it all just flows beautifully. That is most definitely not reality. So it can flow pretty well, but there's all these little things. And you've got to be the person to answer all these questions that come up that, quite frankly, you don't even realize exist until you've done it. And you're just like, oh, my goodness. And by the way, it might not even be the house. It might be the lot. It might be infrastructure. It might be the neighbor. We have streets in Atlanta that literally flood. And if a little bit of dirt gets off of your yard and down the street, the neighbors call in, they're complaining because there's a spot, there's a little piece of mud in front of their yard, 50 feet away. It's like, oh my goodness, right?
Yeah.
So there's a lot of things that go into it that you just generally don't have to deal with when you remodel, especially if it's not a huge remodel.
Yeah. So then would you, okay, but you went the new construction route. So is even with all that prep work, is it better than, do you like it better than going into a remodel?
So this is where it becomes very preferential.
Yeah, that's why I want to know what you like.
You know, I what I like about new construction is you're creating something. I like the creation process. Like I get excited when you're like, there was nothing and now there's something.
Yeah.
So, and that's not even necessarily real estate. That's just what I like. I like to have that, but not everybody's like that. Some people are more of the let's polish it up mindset.
Yeah.
Well, if that's your thing, you probably won't like new construction. Remodel is going to make more sense. I still enjoy some remodeling. I tend to like the easier projects, but like the big full guts, fire damage, pop the tops, I don't get as attracted to that because they become very intensive, but you feel like you're always fixing something. Whereas in new construction, even though you're fixing something, it always feels like you're creating.
Okay.
So it's two different emotional, and that's just me. Someone else might tell you something different, but that's how I look at it is, yes, I'm quote unquote creating in a remodel, but really I'm usually fixing something.
Yeah.
It's usually a result of something else that has to be fixed.
What about the money side of things? So you've got the emotional side, which I really like that, because this is like your creativeness is what's, you know, driving this. Like you want to create. What about the money side? Like, can you make more in new construction? Is that not one of the things that matters to you as much? It's like, I'd rather just create, even if I don't make as much as maybe if I went and did, you know, pop the tops and remodels and stuff like that. I'm just wondering for your situation, if you see that or what you think about on the actual dollars and cents side.
So no, it's a great question. And what we've learned is both can be very profitable. And both can also get you in a lot of trouble, especially if you're dealing with, especially if you're dealing with big remodels. Like,
yeah.
And we've experienced the mountaintop, and we've also experienced the valley. So we've seen both sides. We know what it's like to win big. We also know what it's like to lose where it really hurts. We've seen both sides of it. And what I would tell you is, it's important. But it's like any other deal. You got to make sure the numbers make sense. Mm. And the mistake I made, and I use that word carefully, is when we do remodels, what do we typically do? We learn the Mayo formula, maximum allowable offer, minus rehab. If you're not, you know, and we're assuming you're not wholesaling. So it's max minus rehab, boom, buy it, go. That formula is not very effective in new construction. In fact, I don't think it's hardly effective at all, is what I found. And the reason is, in new construction, you have a lot of variables. Again, there's a lot of preparatory work. So there's a lot more variables involved than even in a big remodel.
Yeah.
Because in a big remodel, you're going to do X, Y, Z, and then you're going to throw a big contingency on there, if it's especially on a bigger project. With new construction, you're still going to have that contingency, but there's so many more variables to consider, because now I'm dealing with lot issues, I'm dealing with permit-specific issues. I have, and I did a video on this recently, you have impact fees. That doesn't exist in a remodel.
Right.
Well, in some municipalities, impact fees can go easily well into the five digits for a single home.
Hmm.
That's a substantial amount of money that you don't ever have to think about over here.
Right. Yeah.
So what we've learned is we started new construction using Mayo, again, right, thinking, well, that just makes sense. Well, not really.
Yeah.
So we ended up building a different calculator altogether to help reverse engineer the process of new construction to determine, is this going to work? And it's funny, because one of the most common questions I get is, you know, this lot's been sitting here for a while, nobody buys it, and I can buy it cheap. Very common. And the answer is almost always the same. Well, the reason it's really cheap is because no one's going to make money building on it.
Mm.
You know, if the ARV is 300 grand, and with today's money, you're not making money. I mean, the seller would have to give you like 100 grand, and this is in our market, the seller would have to give you 100 grand to take it off his hands for you to entertain building, say, a 1,500 square foot simple house.
Wow.
Because of the way the numbers are. So people get attracted to these cheap lots, and you're just like, there's a reason why, like, you know, it's not too good to be true. In fact, it's usually not good at all.
Yeah.
So the numbers are very important, but it's a different metric of calculations. We've learned to put a healthier profit margin on them, because it is a lot of work.
Yeah.
It's a lot of work. When you build a house and you don't make much money, you're like, okay, we didn't get this right. We got to make a shift.
That's really good. So then, and that's where now, are you still doing other types of deals, or is it just new construction that you're focused on?
No, we'll still do some flips, but we're leaning towards simple ones.
Yeah. Okay. Like
no more of the full guts. I mean, not to say we wouldn't do it, but we're not looking for them per se.
Yeah.
You know, we're more looking for just easy deals, some more wholesale deals, buy and hold stuff that's, we've grown, after all these years, we've grown to appreciate, let's just do deals that make money quickly.
Mm.
And then stuff like new construction is great, but it's almost like a pet project.
Okay. That makes sense.
Right. Like, because other, for a while, we had everything was like new. And the problem is they take so long, right? And you want to have that cash flow in the middle.
Right.
So if your goal is to invest in real estate, make sure you're, and it is, again, going back to business fundamentals, had I had that business coach, hey, make sure your cash flow business deals, whatever they are, rentals, wholesale, whatever, is solid. And then you can plug in new construction, because that's not fast money.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So you've learned that it's what's the fastest path, you know, to the cash, and then taking on some of these bigger projects where you might make more, it might be a good creative outlet, but don't do those if you need cash quickly. Like if you're going to
correct, yeah, because it's that's you're basically creating pain, and that's something we learned the hard way. We're like, okay, wait a minute. But yeah. Again, I wasn't getting that the help I needed until I stepped out of certain circles and put myself in business-oriented circles. You know, when you look at it from a business perspective, a new construction or a wholesale deal, at the end of the day, it's a transaction on the books.
Right. Yeah.
Right. It's a transaction on the, and you work with finance, so I know you're right. Like, at the end of the day, they're all just transactions on the books. So what is that time involved to execute those transactions? And then you're like, oh, wait a minute, I didn't get that perspective. My perspective before is let's go get the next deal, right? Let's go get the next deal.
Yep. Exactly. And it's like, yeah, like you said, it's a transaction and you're all just going after that same goal of, okay, do we have more money than we had before, you know, like in this business to make sure that it's actually working. Cause if you're going the wrong way, it's a good way to go down in business. So I like how you put that in just very simple terms. It's like, okay, it's at the end of the day, it's just a transaction. But I think there's been lots of good insights here where, you know, you got into it from the Rich Dad seminar, but then from there I like how you said that perspective of don't split your focus. I feel like that's just so resonant with so many people. Like, they get this shiny object syndrome and then they're like, ooh, that sounds good. Or I'm taking these different classes, learning these different things, going to an event and like, oh, I should be doing what they're doing. So really focusing, getting a coach in your life is specifically a business coach, someone who knows business and not necessarily just always the niche that you're doing, real estate or whatever. I thought that was really good advice. I liked what you said too about the right timing. When you talked about reading, you know, the cash flow quadrant, it's almost like that was good at that point. But then once you're actually in the trenches, things mean different things than when you read them before you were in it. So I thought that was really good too, which, you know, I know this is Profit First REI podcast. So it's like, sounds like that's what happened when we were talking before about Profit First. You know, it's like, hey, this is a great concept. Now let's start to implement it once we get things rolling here. And like, going down that path, so speaking to that right timing thing as well, too. Anything else there?
You know, and you mentioned the book, Cash Flow Quadrant. And another thing I've learned is, you know, we're always seeing, what's the next great book? What's the next great book? What's the next great book? Right. And it's like the books themselves become shiny objects.
That's so good.
But in reality, the most important books that I've learned are one of twofold. One, the ones that focus on fundamentals. And I think the other one, because we need those fundamentals. I always loved that, you know, Michael Jordan always talked about fundamentals and he was the best. So it's like, right. But then you also have those books about people that, you know, their journey to success. And I think those are really valuable because when you hit hard times in this business, and you will, everybody will, it can get pretty dark. And we need those people that have walked that path before us to remind us, okay, as dark as a moment might feel, you're not the only one that's been there, right? Yeah. It's not, the sun will rise again. And I think that's where also having that business coach helps to really help keep you reminded of, keep you grounded, so to speak. Yeah. That as you go through a tough time, it's like, you know, you'll pass. And, you know, I put myself in some circles where I got to meet some very successful people in all facets of business. And one of the things I really loved about that was, they, you know, the ones I talked to, they echoed a similar sentiment, which was, it's hard to appreciate a ton of success if you haven't first walked through a very dark path.
Yeah.
Right. You need that. Right. When you go through that really dark time, then when you come back up to the mountaintop, it means so much more.
Yeah.
Than it might have if you've never had a dark time.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of gratitude in there.
No, that's good. I like that last minute advice there where you said books can become the shiny objects, and then how you're like the two types of books over your career that have really helped you, fundamentals and the journey to success and knowing that you're not alone. Cause that's really good. Cause so many people, like you said, feel like sometimes that they're just that island to themselves. And it's like, well, lots of people have walked this path, and just getting around those people, reading the books about, that's really good. So I really liked it. So then, Frank, how can people connect with you? You know, like, I don't know, a website, you've got the podcast. I don't know. What do you want to, how can people get a hold of you?
Sure. So I'm on all the social media channels, all the common ones, Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, so forth. But I love phone calls. Our number is 678-408-2228. So, you know, text or calls, we're still a little bit old fashioned that way. If you call, leave a voicemail, we'll call you back. Like, we really will. We actually do check our voicemails. It's pretty cool. And also my website, frankiglesias.com. There's a contact form there. So between any of those, I mean, I'm not, if you Google me, I'm not hard to find. So,
well, there you go. That's how you can connect with Frank. If you've enjoyed his wisdom here, what is the name of your podcast so people can look that up too?
Oh yeah. Our podcast is called What Worked For You. And it's a compilation of people that have had entrepreneurial success or are still building up to it, having success in the process. And it's about those journeys that people have taken. And it's really been humbling because, again, it goes back to the you're not in this alone. People have had all these journeys to get there. And it's some good stuff. Powerful. Very humbling.
Yeah. Well, there you go. So What's Worked For You, that's the name of the podcast. And then, oh man, this is really good. There's just so many good gold nuggets here today. Remember not to split your focus. Remember to not have the shiny objects in your life, like even if they're books. Then I really like what you said. Get that business coach, get the right timing, you know, that type of stuff. But then if you're also listening to this and you're like, what the heck? I don't know what I'm doing with my money. And like, I'm making money but feeling broke. And like, yeah, a lot of what he's saying really resonates, but I don't even know how to get ahead. You can head over to simplecfo.com. We can help you take that first step on your journey. Get someone in your life that can help you and guide you and hold your hand if you don't like the financial side of your business. So we can help you from the financial coaching aspect for you if you're a business owner. Frank, this has been awesome. Thanks for coming on today, being a great guest and sharing your wisdom with all the listeners here.
Oh, I appreciate it. Thank you for taking the time. And yeah, I enjoyed it. Thank you, David.
And remember, if you're listening to this, make profit a habit in your business.
This episode of the Profit First for REI podcast is over, but there are plenty more where that came from. Are you ready to learn how David and his team can help implement the Profit First system in your business? Schedule a discovery call at simplecfo.com right now. We'll see you next time on the Profit First for REI podcast with David Richter.